talking to a bunch of tired ass addicts. So there's coffee out there. And I guess I'm going to be talking about triangle of self-obsession. And let's see, how much time? Half hour? Okay. The IP entitled The Triangle of Self-Obsession is one of the first IPs I read. It was probably, I think it was given to me by my first sponsor, possibly not. I first got clean in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Gone on to live in a lot of cities, up and down the East Coast, now in Houston, Texas. And Houston's been good to me. You know, NA is the same everywhere I go, or close enough. Close enough, you know. So I think, you know, not the reason I'm here tonight, but the reason I'm in Narcotics Anonymous is because of the literature. That's it. It's because of the literature. It certainly wasn't because of the personalities I met when I came in, you know, because all I saw was reflections of my punk-ass personality. Someone could share some beautiful stuff for 5 minutes in their share, and all I'd pick out is some stuff that I related to, which was all negative, right? So it certainly wasn't the personalities. I liked the hugs, I gotta admit. I came in, I liked hugs. I don't think too many other people were hugging me at that point, you know? Mama still had a hug for me, but that was about it. So I came in, and I think it was a Tuesday night meeting. They were reading out of It Works How and Why, and they were talking about living at the animal level. Or no, they were reading out of the basic text. Well, they would have had to been if they're talking about living at the animal level. And it was that literature. You know, I don't know why I had such a hard time relating to people. I know when I first came in, I had a hard time relating to people because I would listen to them share about things that they lost in their addiction. They shared a lot about what it was like using. You know, I certainly wasn't going to relate to the stuff they shared about what it was like clean because I didn't know any of that, right? But what they shared about using was a lot of superficial stuff. Like I lost a house, I lost a car, I lost a wife. And I came in at the age of 17, and I thought, oh, I didn't lose any of that stuff. You know, I was so smart that I didn't realize that I didn't have a house, a wife, or a car to lose. But I thought, you know, I didn't lose any of that shit. I can't be like you. You know, I was a quick one. But the basic text shared about feelings. It talked about, you know, I swear to God, someone's going to relate to this shit. I thought that my counselors from rehab and my mother and whatever, people that knew me, got together and whipped up this book because it was the first thing I ever saw that described me accurately, you know? It was the first thing. That was it. It was the first thing ever. And being the first thing, I didn't believe that it was real. I thought they were trying to trick me. A little paranoid. But it didn't matter at that point. I didn't want to feel that way anymore. I didn't want to feel like I was living at the animal level. You know, looking back, I don't know if I was living at an animal level, looking back, but it felt like it. It felt like I lived in an animal level. I see a lot of stuff today, and even clean. I was never homeless when I was using, but I was homeless clean. Bad situation happened, and because of the principles of this program, I humbled myself. I went and got a job at Arby's because they were hiring. I shaved real quick. I went in. They gave me some clothes to wear, and I sliced meat, and they let me eat until I got enough money to turn on water at this apartment, this was in Radford, Virginia. I didn't try to get anyone to take care of me. You know, I went to meetings and got some free coffee, and this program taught me what to do, you know? It taught me how to live, even when it's not easy. The literature is what I related to first, and the literature that I could afford first was the IPs. Because thanks to your seventh tradition, I got them for free. It was great. So this one was suggested to me by my sponsor at the time. And yet again, you know, and this actually, honestly, this was above my head at the time. I didn't understand that I was self-obsessed. I really didn't, you know. And I'm very logical, and today, to make it simple, and at some point I began to realize, if I don't understand something that I read it again. Then I ask people what they got out of it, and then I read it again. And then I read it again. I think someday it clicks. You know, I tend to think things have clicked. So, you know, for me, self-obsession is not only obvious at this point, but it is logical. I had a big black hole that I tried to fill with drugs. And then when I got it, I tried to fill with everything else too. And it was a hole. It means you can't fill it. So only complete and total self-obsession makes sense to try and fill it, right? That's the only tool that would have worked, or that, you know, I would come up with to work. Complete and total self-centeredness. But today, you know, I could discredit my entire recovery and my entire life and say that everything I do is still based in complete and total self-centeredness. Why do I do H&I meetings? You know, hospitals and institution meetings, we take meetings to people that don't have access to outside meetings, right? Why do I do that? So that we get more people to come in, so that they'll run a meeting, so I ain't got to run the meeting, so that I got a meeting to go to and I can sit and listen and share. It's just so I got a meeting to go to. That's it. That's why I do it. You want to know the truth? That's it. And I do. If that's the only reason, I do a lot of service work just so other people go and conduct a meeting so I can go have some recovery. You know? Self-centered yet again. You know? So I could discredit everything and say it's still all based in self-centeredness, you know? But I'm trying to find balance today, you know? And I realize that, you know, if it's not practical, it's not spiritual kind of thing. And I'm trying to learn to ask the right questions. But there's some things, I'm not going to read the whole IP. Some of the things that stuck out at me, I took a look at it. And one of the things that make a lot of sense today still is, it says they become more self-sufficient, talking about people not like me, talking about other people. We call them normies, earth people, et cetera, et cetera. They become more self-sufficient and learn that happiness and contentment come from within. I don't know about anyone else here, but that doesn't sound like me. You know? I didn't even know that was an option. It wasn't until I came to NA that I even found out that was an option. And it wasn't until a while after I came to NA that I thought that was an option for me. Because I still, you know, I thought that, you know, here was my first problem with the second step. It implied at one point I was sane. I didn't remember any point I was saying. People, you know, in our literature it says you may have issues believing that you were insane. I didn't have that issue. I knew I was insane. I had trouble believing that I was ever sane in the past, which is what the second step told me. I could be restored to sanity. Okay, you know, so come to find out that happiness can come from within, you know. And so, how do I live today? Do I try to find happiness from within? One thing I know about recovery is if I'm confused about anything in my life, it's not time to get in a relationship. Because relationship will confuse it. I want to start out good. You know what I mean? Relationship will confuse everything. You know? But is that where I seek my happiness from? That's certainly not coming from within. I got to be honest. Today, I see relationships more as an opportunity for personal growth. That's better. That's better than what I used to see them as. That's still not the idea, you know? I know what I am going for is a relationship, a romantic relationship, being an opportunity to enjoy life with someone else and share my life with them. That's nice. But part of it is, for me, is still seen as an opportunity for personal growth. Whether I see it that way or not, it is, you know? So I seek my happiness from within. I currently am in a relationship. Let's see what I need to say about that. I'm learning a lot. I've learned to apply what I learned from previous relationships at this one, you know? I've learned that every problem that I have in a relationship that is a result of me is a result of my self-centeredness. It becomes real obvious. You know, does that mean that I'm, you know, not capable of getting better? No, you know, but I think that's what it's always going to be. You know, if I go and do all these H&I meetings simply so that other addicts will come and have a meeting for me to go to, you know, is that so bad? You know, I'm okay with that today. So I can honestly say that I don't use that relationship as a means to give me happiness without, you know, going from within. You know, it's a balanced thing. Do I look for happiness from outside myself? Yes. And I always will. But is that the only place I look for happiness? And today it's not true. It's not the only... I do look for happiness from within myself. You know? I actually like who I am today. You know, if it was someone else, I would look at them and be like, hey, they're doing all right. You know? I can't believe that shit. You know? Everything I have today is a result of what people in Narcotics Anonymous have taught me. And not just what they've taught me. I can easily flip back into self-destruction if I didn't have the people in my life that I have today. I can name them. You know, I'm not confused about that. I can easily, it's not easily, it just seems almost natural. Like water flowing downhill. They keep me from becoming self. That's my disease. My disease is self-destruction. You know, it always results in my self-destruction. No matter how it manifests. And you know, in this triangle of self-obsession, I might as well define the whole thing. On the back, for those of you who don't know, it defines the triangle of self-obsession as seeing the past with resentments, the present with anger, and the future with fear. And the idea is to change that so that I see the past with acceptance, the present with love, and the future with faith. So this kind of defines my disease. Whenever I meet people that are just learning about possibly their disease of addiction, this is what I understood first, and so this is what I try to give to them. That my disease is more than the drugs that I put in my body. Our basic text defines the disease of addiction as obsession, compulsion, and complete self-centeredness. If I'm not caught up, you know, I'll skip the philosophy. You know what? Today I'm not caught up in compulsion, obsession, and complete self-centeredness. Complete self-centeredness. That makes me no less of an addict, though. You know? Took me a while to figure that out. You know, once I get my shit together, I think I'm all right. You know? Because I always worked on how things look and not what they are. Judging my insides by other people's outsides, right? You know? It seems, you know, doing that, I always come up short. You know? I always had my disease is a disease of perception. You know? It's a disease of where anything that feels good becomes a means for me to get happiness without having to come from within. You know? So I hit relationships first because I think for me that's the most obvious way to skip going from within and getting some happiness. Never seems to work out that way. But that thing, you know, that's, I have a disease of perception. And my disease tells me, or perceives, that someone else could fill this void inside of me. Hasn't worked yet. You know? And just for today, I'm not doing that. What else? I work a lot. In fact, I've chased a profession and an education for thousands of miles around this country in over 10 years. It's a chase that's working, you know, but I've chased it. And so has that. Have I tried to use that to give me happiness and contentment that doesn't come from within? Yes, I have. I have. I've tried. And another thing I noticed, we always talk about, I hear people a lot talk about escaping like it's always bad. And it depends. If I read a book for a half hour that makes me forget, you know, how much stress I have at work, is that bad? I'm going to go to work tomorrow. You know? It's again with this, and you know what? I'm not suggesting that I can somehow balance my escaping. I'm not good at balance. Once I find something that works as an escape, I like to stick with it, you know? But somehow in my life, I guess through these principles and the people in this program, these things that I find to give me relief, you know, I'm calling it what it is. It's escape. But it's just temporary relief from life on life's terms. You know, when I came in here, they didn't tell me I had to they didn't say, suck it up and be a man. You know, they said, you can do it with our help. They never said life on life's terms is easy. They said I could do it. They said we could do it. You know, and that's been true. And I find sometimes I need a break. And if you've never been to Texas, you don't know what Schlitterbahn is. This is what Schlitterbahn was designed for. It's the largest water park in the world. That's where you go. It's all right. But, man, you guys are dead. Let me try something here. I'm going to say what the triangle of self-obsession is, and you guys say, oh my. Can we do this real quick? Huh? Resentment, anger, and fear.
Oh my.
Resentment, anger, and fear.
Oh my.
Yeah, that was cool. All right. Thank you, Gavin. Thank you. You know, this is fun. You know, and I keep my recovery fun. I don't like recovery when I don't feel like I'm a part of it. You know, I'm standing on the outside. We have, in Houston, we have these, they're not sign-in books. This is the quote for the beginning of the meeting. These are not sign-in books. These are tools we use to get and give phone numbers. Up here, apparently, I had to actually ask for the fucking phone number. But down there, you just take it off the book. And you have a message. You give name, phone number, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, you write your message, and people say, just for today. And I almost always write, fuck yeah. Because a lot of times when I get to the meeting, I ain't so excited about my recovery. When I start out with a nice fuck yeah, I'm getting ready to be excited about my recovery. I'm here to have a, you know, I'm, you know, one of the readings that I just for today is like feeling good isn't the point, right? But it's not, you know, feeling bad ain't the point neither. So what else do I use to try and get happiness and contentment not from within? What else? Let's see. What do I do when I'm stressed? You know, it's kind of like a second step thing, right? Anything that restores me to the sanity must be a power greater than myself. Easy logic, right? Because I couldn't do it. I don't like being insane. If I could do it, I would do it. So anything that can do it must be a power greater than myself. So now I got this list of things. And we got these nice definitions of insanity. I remember what it was like to want to use drugs more than anything else on this planet at whatever cost. That was insane. I don't need no better definition than that. Obsession is insane. Especially obsession on shit that's going to kill me. And I know it. I got the evidence today. You know? That's insane. So anything that takes away the obsession, power greater than myself. Right? That's an easy one. If I could have... I remember when that obsession first became... started being obvious. You know? I ain't got a bag. And I was like, I didn't want a bag this bad last week. Guess what? Here it comes. We're in for a long ride, huh? You know, and so what alleviates me of that obsession? You know, one of the first things that alleviated me of obsession was going to a meeting. I didn't know what was going on at the meeting, but I went to the meeting, and for the first time, I didn't want to use for an hour. It was just an hour, right? But that's like magic. I didn't know anything else to take it away. I tried playing solitaire on the computer. I tried hanging out with old friends. Yeah, that worked great. You know, I tried all kinds of shit to just take the obsession away, right? Finally, I go to this meeting because I had this neighbor. He takes me to this meeting, and I get this hour of reprieve. And so, I went back. That wasn't hard to figure out. You know, I went back. And then that hour started expanding into whole days. You know, it's like magic. And I still don't understand it. But so the group of recovering addicts living clean and caring about me was the first thing that ever restored me to sanity. You know, and needless to say, I got a list today. And I'm not stuck with the six things on the back. Let's see, what do your guys' meeting schedule say? Let's see this. Huh? Does it say anything good? No advice on the meeting schedule here. No, okay, hey, whatever. Hey, that's okay. Some of the meeting schedules around, they say, some suggestions are go to 90 meetings in 90 days, use phone numbers, get a sponsor, work steps. They say stuff like this, right? And so I got people say they're like five, six things, right? That was my first list. And now here's where I get, so in another IP, I guess I need to start being more focused here. In another IP called Another Look, which still blows my mind, I am creative. And I used to use that creativity to degrade and destroy myself. Simple. And it was at some point it wasn't like that. And imagine, you know, my amazement as I go through life is like every time I leave the house, you know, I knew in wondrous ways I can degrade myself. I'm so creative. And I didn't realize it. I didn't realize how it was happening, but I noticed it. So I get to become creative in ways that feed my recovery today. That list of stuff that restores me to sanity, I got a big list. And I got that list because I was open-minded and willing to try new things when I came in here. Lord knows I had the free time. Remember when you first got clean, all that free time? Using dope took a lot of time. So I got all this free time. So I could either watch a tube, you know, I mean, what are my choices? I'm free to do whatever I want. So go try, you know, I tried everything. I tried basket weaving, pottery. You know what? I didn't like all of them. But I got enough today that I got a big list of things that worked. And why do I have a big list? Because I was never guaranteed that one thing, if one thing worked all the time, I wouldn't need a list. If just praying worked all the time for me, I wouldn't need to go to meetings. I wouldn't need to work steps. I wouldn't do nothing because I never used because it would work all the time. Wouldn't change, but I wouldn't use, you know. So I got a list of stuff, and I got stuff. Everybody's list, I hope everybody's list is pretty different because I got stuff at the top of the list that works most of the time. Going to meetings, I think for me, is tippy top. I don't know. I don't understand that. I think the hugs help, you know. So I got looking for happiness and contentment, not from within. So what do? I can do the second step stuff, you know, because I'm talking about real life balance here. You know, I'm not always capable of bringing happiness and contentment from within. You know, I end a relationship, shit don't work at work, I just got knocked up the motorcycle again, whatever, you know. I'm supposed to bring contentment and happiness from within on that day? No. I need to go to a meeting and let someone else help me have some happiness and contentment. I mean, that's my experience anyway. You know? I'm not a fire starter. You know, I can't do shit like that. But do I try to fill this void? And it's not always like fill the void, you know? But do I try to, you know, feel all right with shit that's going to kill me? With shit that's going to hurt someone else? With shit that's going to make me feel more degraded? Or do I try to do it with stuff that's positive, you know? Positive. No. The other thing in here that I happen to underline is we reach a point where contentment and fulfillment are impossible. People, places, and things cannot possibly fill the emptiness inside us. We react to them with resentment, anger, and fear. Resentment, when I came here, I was one of the few people that could pronounce anonymity. However, I did not know what resentment meant. And this was important because I was going to have to know what the fuck this meant in order to do some step work, right? You're just going to step. I don't know what the fuck that means. So it defines it perfectly. Resentment is the way most of us react to it. It is the reliving of past experiences again and again in our minds. I understood that. Before I ever picked up a drug, every night of my life, I laid in bed and replayed shit over and over. Shit from today, shit from yesterday, shit from 4 years ago. I thought that's the way it was, and I figured everybody did it. Once again, I never asked anyone else how I was. I always just thought I was special, you know. And so I figured out that just about everything I remembered, by that definition, constituted a resentment. Made for, you had to read all this shit, too. It made for a long four step. Because I put it all down. And you know what those resentments constituted was basically anything that violated my expectations. Anything that violated my sense of, what's it called? My sponsor uses this phrase all the time. Wait, sense of entitlement. Sense of entitlement. Anything that, you know, anything that made me feel afraid or feel things that I didn't want to feel. You know? And then anger and fear was just natural. That was the rest of life. You know? That's all it was. So to move away from that, we're looking for acceptance. You know, I could have made the whole topic a lot easier. I had resentment, anger, and fear. I do step work. I gain acceptance, love, and faith. End of topic. You know? But it's really, you know, it's like you come in here and sometimes my problem seems so complicated, but the answer is always the same. You know, look for my part, work some steps, get with some other recovering addicts, and either be a part of the solution, but don't be a part of the problem. You know, and strangely today, that's a lot easier than it always seemed. I don't know. Probably because I had a lot of people helping me, teaching me how to do it, you know. This last one, fear. Most of us realize today that, you know, all of my defects and And a lot of how I live, you know, my behaviors, my perceptions are all based in fear, right? Strange thing happened. At some point, I develop people, you know, I develop relationships, real relationships with people that love me in Narcotics Anonymous, and that bond became so real for me that I no longer was afraid of anything. It wasn't like all day, but when I go to a meeting, it's the first time I ever didn't know fear, like about nothing. It's gone, you know? You know, these people, they ain't special. They're as fucked up as I am, sometimes more. I try to keep a balance. I like to have people healthier than me in my life and people sicker than me in my life. That way I don't think I'm too good or too sick, you know? Keep a nice grade. But this last one, fear, we're in a good place for this tonight, you know? We're at a convention. And some people ain't never been taught, and some people been taught wrong. But when you're at a convention, you hug people you don't know. You get to know people, you know? And that's how we do it. You might not see them ever again. What word the fuck is Mike? You might see them 10 years later and say, what do I remember you from? Oh, I saw you at the first Unity retreat of Limhanna 10 years ago. That's where I saw you, you know? This shit is cool, you know? And as awesome as those people are, they only help me as much as I let them. I can isolate at any time. They can't work my steps for me, you know. But they don't just make my recovery possible. They make my life, I don't want to say worth living, because we're talking about finding happiness from within, right? But life on life's terms, for me, not always easy. Without the people in my life from Narcotics Anonymous, my life just wouldn't be that much fun. Just wouldn't. I'd still have my hobbies. I got lots of hobbies, lots of interests, lots of stuff, you know. I like doing it with them. And, I mean, that's it. I like doing it with them, you know. How much time? What are we looking at? Help me out. Tim, you decide. This is special for me to be up here, too, you know. See everybody. So, happiness from within. What I am inside today is my experiences. You know, what I am inside today is how I see myself. You know? And I was confused at one point. I remember it was another IP, self-acceptance. A few months into recovery, I'm thinking, well, what the... I'm doing pretty good. Why don't I have self-acceptance yet? Right? But I got it confused. There's a difference between, you know, self-acceptance and self-worth. You know? I accepted myself as an addict the day I came in and tried to get clean. You know, the day I got that white key tag. I didn't have self-worth until I started doing shit that was worthy of, you know, that had some worth to it. It becomes a lot more simple, you know? So, happiness from within. These experiences and who I am today and what you guys have created. I hope you fucking like it because you created it. It's your fault. Blame it on people. The guy spoke here a few years ago. He's like, you know what? We don't get no credit for this. And on the flip side, if you don't like it, don't blame me. All right? You know? You know, it's just really cool to go through this process with other recovering addicts. You know, and the happiness and contentment that I get from within today is because inside of me, they're there. You know, my higher power's there. Who I've become is there. You know, there's a lot more in there now than just resentment, anger, and fear. There's a lot more in there than just manipulation. You know, and there's a lot more in there than just this whole fucking huge void. I don't know how you can stick anything else in there with that big ass void. I don't got that today. I don't got that void. I don't feel it today. It's really cool here. You know, and the whole IP is the last part, it says, we must grow up or die. I came in here thinking I had a drug problem. It's telling me to grow up. I didn't realize how much I needed to grow up. I didn't realize how far from being grown up I was. You know? And what does this have to do with it? You know what? You guys taught me. I mean, I gave you an example. I go to Arby's and slice meat. I had a degree in chemistry. I wasn't going to go. I was going to handle my shit. But I get tired of handling my shit, so I go to a meeting and get some free coffee. You know? Let some people hug me. You know? I don't know, because all the things I talk about with my work, and I like motorcycles now. I don't know. Whatever. It's fun. Yeah, I used to build shit, right? I built some, it wasn't pretty. Like, I built shelves, and it looked like from Dr. Seuss, and shit was all crooked, and I had to nail it to the wall so it doesn't fall out. I swear to God, I'll show you. It's in my mom's house. And, but this, like, I built a motorcycle. Well, not build, you know, I put it together. And you get to ride it. You don't get to ride shelves. That's fucking cool. You know? I see in my life today, I think I'm being pretty honest. At least not, you know, I think I'm being honest and saying that I don't use those things to avoid living life on life's terms. Use them as breaks. You know, just like I use all the stuff. Those are part of my second step. Those are things that give me, like, restore me to sanity, because there ain't shit I can do until I'm restored to sanity. So finding this happiness from within, you know, it's a trip being up here, because, you know, don't leave till a miracle happens, right? At one point in my life, I was standing in the same room, not understanding how the fuck to get happiness inside me so I can get it from within, you know? And now I got it today, and I don't understand really where it came from and what I do with it. You know? I just did what you guys said, you know? And like, you know, we make one promise, freedom from active addiction. I've gotten so much. You wouldn't even know what to promise me if you had tried to make some. My resentment, staying awake every night. First time I worked the third step, that stopped. And I haven't had it happen more than one day since. Like, one day, a couple months later, maybe a day. You know, shit like that. You couldn't have promised. Yeah, no. Man, maybe some of you know. But you can't promise shit like that, you know? You just told me work some steps. Don't use. You know, it's crazy what I got out of this. You know, and for me, this ain't for no one else, but for me, I have I owe something for it. I really, really do. Not just to this fellowship, but I mean, to humanity or whatever. Yeah, I gotta do something with this. I got a life worth living today. Do something with it. Whatever that is to me, you know? But first and foremost, I owe NA everything. Everything. You know? Even some of my character defects. You fuckers gave them to me too. That's all right. So I guess, you know, that's about time. Probably past. I don't fucking know.
Thanks again, Gil. Our second speaker tonight is Tim C. from the Better Change Group of Narcotics Anonymous, Southfield, Pittsburgh, area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Hey, everybody, I'm an addict. My name's Tim. Growing up sucks, don't it? No, I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, when I was in rehab, they called it the King Baby Syndrome. I want what I want, and I want it now. You know, so basically, what it said was emotionally, I was a little kid. I didn't know how to take no for an answer. You know, if you told me no, I set about getting exactly what I wanted any way I could, not caring what the consequences were. You know, the first time I read The Triangle of Self-Obsession, I knew it was me. I understood it. I said, yep, this is me. You know, it says that I never outgrew the self-centeredness of a child. You know, and even today I can resort to that. I don't know. It was in the beginning, because pretty much it's basically what it comes down to. What recovery is teaching me is how to grow up, because I never did. When I came in here, I was a 39-year-old little kid. Emotionally, I was a little kid. I didn't know how to deal with anything. I didn't know how to deal with life. I didn't know how to deal with my feelings or my emotions, because my whole life, all I did was get high. Anytime I felt something, I went out and got high. Anytime I didn't want to feel something, I went out and got high. Yeah, it's, you know, the people I sponsor today, you know, come up and ask me to sponsor them. The first thing I do is hand them that IP. Because for me, that's what recovery is about, growing up. Resentment, anger, and fear, the triangle of self-obsession. See, the past, it amazes me how, like, I can take something that happened to me 40 years ago and remember it like it was yesterday. I can take that shit and run it through my head, experience all the feelings, and go out and get high. See, that's what I did. See, it says our disease is obsessive-compulsive, and at the core of it is self-centeredness. So what I would do is I would take those resentments that I had and use them to justify me getting high. You know, I had a lot of things happen to me, like growing up, you know, the abuse, and those were the excuses that I used. I lived in the past my whole life until I got here. You know, it says we have this big that we try to fill with everything else. Anything outside of me to make me feel better. What I've learned coming here is that I find something to fill that hole inside of me. You know, that power greater than me. I like in the 11th step in the Works on Why, it talks about God's will. And it says, God's will for us is the ability to live with or without material things, with or without a partner, with or without something else. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, it goes on to say that God's will is for us is the ability to live with dignity, to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings, to love ourselves and to love others. You know, and it goes on to say that our most heartfelt longing and dreams for our lives are coming true. And, you know, I can see that. I've been around here long enough to see that start to happen in my life. You know, every time that I've tried to take something outside of me to make me feel better, it never worked. Never. It always left me feeling empty, and has given me something to fill that hole with. I was talking with a friend of mine before I got up here, and somebody told me one time that resentment's like piss in your pants. Everybody can see it, but you're the only one that can feel it. And I could relate to that, because like I said, you know, I had those things that I had with me my whole life that I fed my disease with, you know, a resentment. What is a resentment? You know, and Chuck read the definition. It's also an expectation is a preconceived resentment. When I set expectations on other people, I'm already setting myself up for a resentment. You know, and my sponsor would drone in my head, no expectations, Tim. And I was like, you know, how the hell do you not have expectations? Because I can't. But what I've learned to do is with my expectations, when they're not met, I don't get so disappointed, and it doesn't lead to a resentment. And it's only through the process of, like, applying the steps to it that it's given me the ability to be okay with it, you know, be okay with life on life's terms. know, I still set expectations today. I try not to, though. You know, one of my... I hear people say that there are no musts in NA. Oh, there are no musts. Well, Chuck read it at the end of that IP. Whenever anybody tells me there's no musts in NA, I grab that IP and I hand it to them and I say, here, read the last six words. There's a must right there. Grow up or die. When I first got clean, that was one of the things that I was here to learn, is how to grow up, because I had no clue how to live. You know, in the basic text, it says that we were reduced to animal instincts. The capacity to feel human was lost. Man, when I read that, even today, it still gets me to a point where I can remember that. You know, I've taken that ability to, like, have this total recall in my head and used it for positive things rather than all them negative things that I used to use, the excuses that I used to get high with. And what it is it's the ability... my obsessions on positive things rather than negative things. I'm still real good at it, though. Picking up those negative things and wanting to run with them. You know, my sponsor taught me a lot, too, about expectations. He told me when I first got clean, he says, I want you to do five things, five random acts of kindness, and not tell another human being. I said, okay, I could do that. So I went out and I set about doing five random acts of kindness. And, you know, when I was done with them, I was all proud of myself. You know, look at me. I'm doing real good. And I went up and I talked to him. I said, well, you know, I completed the five things that you asked me to do, and I didn't tell anybody. He said, well, yeah, you did. You just told me. I was like, wow. And see, what it taught me, though, was is I didn't realize that I'm so self-centered that anything I ever did always had a motive behind it. I always did something because I wanted something in return. And one of the things that I was taught here was is selfless service. You know, to do things without any expectations attached to them. And I'll tell you what, man, it's hard. You know, if you think it's easy, I didn't realize how much I liked that pat on the back. To do something for somebody and not tell another human being. That was a big growing experience. You know, and where I learned were applying the steps to my life. You know, they say that the recovery side of the triangle self-obsession is acceptance, love, and faith. Acceptance. The basic text told me that one of the hardest things for addicts to do is to accept things. That's why it took me so long to get clean. I was in and out of these rooms for 12 years before I actually, like, stayed. And acceptance is one of the spiritual principles in the first step. Surrender, acceptance, and honesty. When I can accept, I mean, truly accept in my heart that I'm an addict, everything else kind of started to fall into place, you know. And it all started with, like, applying that first step to my life. You know, they say faith will move mountains, but I have to do the footwork. I have to bring a shovel. And we were talking the other day about faith and God's will. And, you know, I used to want everything given to me. I expected things. The world owed me. You know, I was physically, sexually, mentally abused when I was little. I was owed something, and I was going to get it. And I realized all I ever did was cheat myself. You know, that anger. So I read a lot about anger. And, what I found was, is those expectations. You know, I set those expectations. And when I set expectations, my feelings either got hurt, or was scared. I was afraid. I read this book of Successfully Managing Anger, and it said, I have this vision of the perfect world. And when the real world conflicts with my perfect world, I set about trying to manipulate, control, situations to make it go back to where I think it should be. And by doing that, all it ever did was frustrate me and create anger. And with the anger came the resentments. And what it said was is that by trying to control with anger, what I did was what I wanted to do was I wanted to pull people in closer to me, but what I was actually doing was pushing them away. And I don't know, man. It gets awful lonely being angry and miserable all the time. I don't know about anybody else, but I don't like hanging out with people like that. And I didn't get clean to be miserable either. You know, I wanted to be happy. I wanted to enjoy life. I wanted to be okay with who I was. You know, some of the gifts that I've gotten from this program is the fact that, like, I'm okay with who I am today. Because when I came in here, man, I crawled in here. Everybody was better than I was. And I find out today that I'm not that bad of a person. It was all the things that I did that made me who I was, who I thought made me who I was. My actions, the things that I do, define who I am inside. It isn't the things that I come up here and say. It's the things that I do. The helping other people, that selfless service that I've learned, you know, doing things without expecting something in return. It did something inside of me. It changed who I was into a person that I wanted to be. You know, I'm not there yet, but that's where the process has taken me. I'm getting closer to being that person that I want to be and not that resentful, angry asshole that would, like, steal and rob you as soon as you turned your back. It's nice to, like, be who I am today, and I'm okay with it. To live with dignity. I had about a year and a half clean, and I was in a meeting, and this gentleman, whom I admired, had like 25 years, and it was in Johnstown. Tony was his name. And we were talking after a meeting, and he looked me in the eye, and he says, you know, he says, you have dignity, or you have integrity. I'm standing there, and I'm like, integrity? I know he wasn't talking to me. I'm not this junkie that would, like, rob and steal you as soon as you turn your back. I don't know, man, it did something to me. Integrity, the ability to do the right thing when nobody's looking. To, like, be okay with who I am. Accepting that I am an addict and I do have the ability to change if I want to. If I want to put some effort into it, some work. You know, freedom. You know, Chuck touched on freedom. Freedom ain't free. I have to do some work in order to obtain that freedom. And I was just talking with my son. Through the ability of, like, staying clean one day at a time, I got custody of my 16-year-old about a year ago. And, you know, it's funny because he's, like, at 16 right now. And I see me when I first came into the rooms and him now. You know, that little kid that I was, that, like, I want what I want, and I want it now. The king baby. You know, I want this right now. You have to drop everything to do. And it's funny because I've learned a lot of patience through that, too. I have this shirt on, and it says freedom. And on the back, definition here. Can you read this definition for me?
Liberty of the, or incarceration. Two, exemption from unpleasant or onerous conditions. And three, the state of being free from bondage.
State of being free from bondage. From my addiction, you know, that self-imposed. There's a passage in the basic text. By maintaining abstinence and working the steps, I get a daily reprieve from my self-imposed life sentence. I did all this shit to myself. Nobody did it to me. I blamed everybody, but I was the one that did it to me. And I have the power today to do something about it, not to be that victim that I was my whole life. And it's not free. It's not. I have to put some effort into it. That's why when I got up here, I said, growing up sucks. And it does. And that's why it took me 39 years to start to do it. Because I didn't want to. And there are times where, believe me, I feel like, look, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to crawl in a hole. And I want everybody to leave me alone. I want the world to go by. The first time it happened, it scared me. Text that there's a point where like recovery gets mundane, you know, the day in and day out things, and it scared me. And I went to a meeting and I was talking about it. I says, look, man, I don't want to be here. I don't want to work the steps. I just want to be left alone, crawl in a hole, and just, you know, I'll be okay. Leave me alone. My sponsor pulled me aside after the meeting, and he said, you're at a crossroads. He says, now you have two choices. Either keep going where you're going and use, or reaffirm your commitment to, like, recovery. And, you know, and it also says in the basic text that those periods in our recovery is there's forces of change going on inside of us. So when I reaffirmed that decision of, like, this is what I wanted to do, I started to change. I started to grow up a little bit more inside. Because I made a decision and I stuck with it. I didn't run out like I had did in the past. I'm growing up, man. I'm growing up in here. This is where I've learned the tools that I need to accept life on life's terms. I didn't know how to do that before. You know, I didn't want to admit that I was powerless over anything. My first sponsor, whom I owe a lot to, told me one time that I can't save my ass and my face at the same time. You know, that ego and that false pride that I came in here with, I have to leave the door. That jailhouse mentality that I had when I came in here, I got to leave at the door. I have to grow up or die. Actually, it's pretty nice, man, because, like, for the first time in my life, I'm free. And I'm happy. And I'm doing things I want to do. You know, I mean, I have responsibilities. You know what? Sometimes it ain't all peaches and cream. You know what? That's what I need to do. Those are my responsibilities. This is the path that I chose for myself. And I accept that today. You know, before I didn't want to. I'm definitely great. One of the things, too, in the flip side of the triangle of self-obsession is love. You know, that was something that I had no clue about either. Sex and love confused. And somebody pulled me aside one day and said, you know, you're fucked up. There's something wrong with you. You know, that isn't what loved me. I was like, yeah, okay, that's, you know, I'm glad you do. What I learned was is love is genuine concern for another human being, nothing less and nothing more. You know, to care about another human being means that I love them. And when I found that out, it made it a lot easier for me to, like, come into the rooms and, like, tell people I love them. You know, my parents never taught me those things. The only thing I was taught at home was, don't talk, don't tell, and don't feel. And I'm an addict who's like overly sensitive. You know, and my mother used to tell me all the time, you're too damn sensitive. And I'm okay with that today. You know, it's okay to feel. You know, all those lies that I was taught, that's bullshit. I'm a human being. Feels good to be human again, to want to live in faith. That's that thing that no matter what happens, I don't have to get high. Because I have people in my life that love me, that'll listen to me when I need, when I have problems. I'm growing up, and I'm definitely okay with it. There was a lot of growing pains in the beginning, but I'm getting to the other side. Time that, like, sitting there and listening to another human being is an act of love. And I'd like to thank each and every one of you for showing me some love tonight. Thanks.